Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this segment, we're going to be taking a look at some early Third Reich social programs that were designed for dealing with the so-called asocial. Now, the definition of asocial for the Third Reich is something that we're going to be going into a little later in this particular segment. This broadcast is going to be dealing with the Hashüde experimental social policy for the so-called asocial in Nazi Germany. Hashüde, by the way, is spelled H-A-S-H-U-D-E. As I record this in July of 1995, I think it's worth contemplating the similarity between some of these early Third Reich programs for dealing with the social ills of the time and some of the programs that are either already on the books, either in municipalities, states, or on the on the books of federal law, or proposals that are being kicked around in the political arena. In past broadcasts, I have emphasized in no uncertain terms that fascism and Nazism were not European phenomena, that indeed fascism is not something in any way alien to the United States. Many of the most powerful industrialist financiers, military and political figures in this country, not to mention influential social thinkers, were ardently pro-fascist and pro-Nazi. That's one of the reasons that accounted for the failure of denazification at the end of World War II in Germany. That is one of the things that set the stage for the reemergence of German fascism. It is also one of the things that has set the stage for the descent of America into fascism. And that is something that is, in my considered opinion, well underway in July of 1995. And by way of attempting at least to learn something from history, I think it is worth examining the early Third Reich policies for dealing with, quote, asocials, unquote, and the disturbing similarity between some of the policies that are either already being implemented or being advocated in the United States in July of 1995. I'm not suggesting that these comparisons represent a perfect analogy. I'm not sure there is such a thing in history. However, it should be noted that these similarities, it should be noted that despite the fact that these are not precise historical analogies, they are, in my opinion, valid analogies and extremely important ones. Ones that if we do not learn, if we do not learn the lesson of history, the failure to do so will come back to haunt us for a long time. Research credit on the article that we're going to be using in this segment goes to Dave White, our pan-European translator and researcher. Dave got this from History Today magazine from July of 1995. This article is entitled Hashüde, again spelled H-A-S-H-U-D-E, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation. This is a place in Germany. Subtitled An Experiment in Nazi Asocial Policy, and asocial is in quotes. The author is Lisa Pine, P-I-N-E, just like in the pine tree. She is a lecturer in modern history at the University of Luton, L-U-T-O-N. First part of the article that we're going to be dealing with talks about just what the Nazis meant when they talked about asocials. In the July 95 History Today, again, the article Hashüde, An Experiment in Nazi Asocial Policy, we read of the Nazis' definition of asocial, skipping down. Asocials were portrayed as the dregs of society, whose inferiority was marked by traits such as weakness of character, lack of restraint, loose morals, disinterest in contemporary events, idleness, and poverty of mind. The term was applied in an elastic manner also to gypsies, vagabonds, persons of no fixed abode, i.e. homeless, prostitutes, alcoholics, unmarried mothers, homosexuals, large, quote, inferior, unquote, families, criminals, idlers, good-for-nothings, wastrels, grumblers, and grousers, as well as anyone else who did not, could not, or would not perform their duties to the national community. Persecution of such groups was relatively easy, since they were, in any case, the objects of popular disapproval. Please note that the persecution of these groups was easy. There are several important lessons to be learned from this. In the first place, the disapproval of such groups as the homeless and other people, granted that the fact that they are unattractive, but the disapproval in urban neighborhoods and the disapproval on the part of the urban gentry for the of the presence of groups like this may very well lead to policies which could someday, in the event of an economic collapse and political crisis, lead to the establishment of American Auschwitzes. I would not rule that out.
But please note that the persecution of these groups was relatively easy because of the social disapproval, one of many things that I think is analogous to the United States in July of 1995. Continuing with this particular article, during the Weimar Republic, there had already been considerable concern about the future of the German population, both in qualitative and quantitative terms. Indeed, such concerns were not unique to Germany. It was feared that the decrease in the birth rate would result in first the aging and ultimately the death of the nation. Additionally, there were anxieties that the proliferation of the ill and unfit was leading to a decline in the health and productivity of the population. There were calls from eugenicists for a rational management of the population in order to change these trends. Eugenics began to be seriously considered as a, quote, scientific, unquote, solution to social and welfare problems, and as a means of arresting the decline of the nation. Professional self-aggrandizement and class prejudice played a role here, as the majority of the eugenicists were of middle-class origin and sought to preserve their class from biological extinction. Hence the term fit was applied almost exclusively to the educated and socially valuable, quote-unquote, elements in society. Essentially, performance and success in social life were the yardsticks by which the value of individuals and families were measured. Now, again, I think that this is applicable to 1995 America as it was to Weimar Germany. And again, I want to stress the similarity, not a precise similarity, but a similarity nonetheless, between many of the programs being implemented at the municipal, state, or federal levels to deal with various social problems in this country, and also things that are being proposed to deal with social problems. The similarity between the proposals in America or actual laws in America in July of 95 and what happened in Weimar and Nazi Germany in the 20s and 30s is something worth taking note of. Skipping down in this particular story, or in this particular article, I should say, the Nazi seizure of power brought more drastic solutions regarding the elimination, quote-unquote, of the hereditarily ill and the asocial. Two new laws were passed, which had a considerable impact upon the asocial and criminal elements of society. The first was the Law for the Prevention of Hereditarily Diseased Offspring of July 14, 1933. This legislation was introduced to prevent individuals with certain specific hereditary diseases from reproducing, although the hereditary character of some of the diseases was dubious. Although asociality was not specified in the law, many asocials were compulsorily sterilized because their asocial or sexual behavior deviated from national socialist norms. By the way, the profound influence of the international eugenics community and eugenics legislation in the United States upon the Third Reich's social legislation and Third Reich policy has been dealt with in several archive shows, notably euthanasia in contemporary America and Nazi Germany, also the Seeds of Nuremberg broadcast, also the Family Values program from November of 1994. All of those available from Archives on Audio, and the address, etc., for Archives on Audio, a tape duplication service, will be covered later on in this segment. I should say I will give it to you later in the segment. Continuing with the Lisa Pine article, Hasuda, an experiment in Nazi asocial policy. Continuing. In addition to the Law for the Prevention of Hereditarily Diseased Offspring of 1933, that, by the way, based on a California law, in addition to that, another measure that was implemented by the Nazis to deal with so-called asocial behavior was one that I think bears a notable, although again not precise, similarity to the Three Strikes legislation that is currently in vogue and actually on the books in a number of states. Continuing with Hasuda. The second measure was the Law Against Dangerous Habitual Criminals of November 24, 1933. Asocial individuals could henceforth be kept in unlimited preventive detention if they had two or more criminal convictions. Certain grades of, quote, racial biological criminals, unquote, especially sex offenders, could be compulsorily castrated under the terms of this law. And again, note the similarity, not precise, but with the Three Strikes legislation that is currently either in vogue in national debate or actually on the books in a number of different states. Continuing. Other early measures against asocials included the persecution of tramps, vagrants, and the work shy, quote-unquote. From July of 1933 onwards, Joseph Goebbels, the Minister of Propaganda, called for a nationwide swoop on beggars to drastically cleanse urban environments and to focus public charity upon the party's own charitable agencies. Raids during Beggars Week from September 18th through 25th of 1933 resulted in the detention of some 100,000 beggars and vagrants in police, quote, protective custody, unquote. However, the majority of them were released within a few days as the existing prison system had no room for them. Interrupting, I think, the comparison with the so-called Beggars Week raids of Nazi Germany and from September of 1933, and some of the programs being implemented in various cities to deal with the homeless problem, granted a very severe problem. I would note in this regard the Matrix program that has been instituted in San Francisco. I think the similarity between some of the Third Reich's programs and things that are either on the books or already proposed in America should again be noted. Note also that there are proposals to house poor people and or criminals in closed military bases, the setting up of boot camps to deal with various kinds of offenders, elements of the weed and seed program put in place by George Bush's Justice Department, and a number of other programs, again, either proposed or already on the books, bear a number of similarities to the Hasshüte program and other German laws for dealing with the asocials. Note also that, as this article has pointed out, pressure for dealing with the asocials often came from below. And this is not to find fault with the individuals when I say that that is certainly something that is often true in the United States when people who are of a higher social and economic status often are lobbying rather intensely for municipal and state governments to, quote, do something, unquote, about the homeless, the poor, etc. Again, note this for the purposes of attempting to learn from history. Bear in mind also what the ultimate conclusion of the Third Reich's asocial policies were. The, quote, asocials, unquote, and the vagueness and lack of precision about that definition was made perfectly clear by Lisa Pine in her article. What a, quote, good-for-nothing, a wastrel, a grumbler, or a grouser is anybody's guess. Obviously, it's whatever anybody thinks it is. Those are highly subjective terms. Nonetheless, those were subjective terms that had the status of law under the Third Reich. Continuing. And again, also note, before we resume the Lisa Pine article, that despite the sweep in Beggars Week, most of the people rounded up had to be released because there was no prison space for them. Note again the similarity between Weimar and Nazi Germany and contemporary America. And again, note the proposals that are being floated to deal with this problem. Returning to the Lisa Pine article about Hasshüte. Despite this fiasco, the regime's determination to take a stand against asocials meant that from 1934 onwards, measures against them became increasingly harsh. The provisions of the criminal code dealing with beggars and vagrants were made much tougher. For example, homeless people had to carry vagrants registration books, which recorded their stays in approved overnight shelters. If they did not have such a book, they were categorized as, quote, disorderly wanderers, unquote, and could be arrested and imprisoned. I would note the laws in many states making it mandatory to carry picture ID are similar in certain respects to this particular Third Reich Code. Again, I'm not suggesting this is a precise analogy, but I think it is a valid one and an important one. Continuing. The impetus for the persecution of asocials often came from below by means of local initiatives rather than as the result of national high-level policy decisions. Welfare authorities wished to offload costs, and ordinary householders wished to be rid of transient nuisance neighbors. The creation of ad hoc camps for gypsies in various locations throughout Germany in the mid-1930s, such as Marzahn in Berlin, was one example of this combination of forces. Another local enterprise was a slum clearance scheme in Hamburg in 1934 and 5, by means of which whole areas of the city populated with criminals, prostitutes, communists, and other asocials were demolished. Again, I would note some similarities between this and certain aspects of, for example, the weed and seed program and other programs being implemented to deal with our, quote, asocials, unquote. And I think in many ways America's definition of, quote, asocials is just as broad, vague, and politically loaded as were the Third Reich's. Continuing. Of the program in Hamburg to deal with asocials, let me resume by rereading the last couple of sentences, or the last sentence. The creation of ad hoc camps for gypsies in various locations throughout Germany in the mid-1930s, such as Marzahn in Berlin, was one example of this combination of forces. Another local enterprise was a slum clearance scheme in Hamburg in 1934 and 5, by means of which whole areas of the city populated with criminals, prostitutes, communists, and other asocials were demolished. The criminal geography of the city showed a high incidence of crime, fights, juvenile delinquency, and sexual deviance within vicinities inhabited by those defined as asocials. The physical destruction of the hereditary properties of these asocials put an end to this. Hasshüte, the experimental asocial colony set up in Bremen in October of 1936, was another initiative of this kind, focusing upon families in the shadier reaches of the Lumpen proletariat, and indeed the Hasshüte mandatory rehabilitation facility, to coin a term, I think bears a number of important similarities, again, to either existing social legislation or proposed social legislation in the United States in July of 1995 to deal with our growing social problems and our, quote, asocials, unquote. Please note the use of the quotes. Continuing. The issue of whether or not asocial families were able to be rehabilitated for life within society was the subject of much controversy. Some of those involved in dealing with the asocial problem, unquote, believed that it was possible to educate asocial families by means of discipline into a position from which they could be reintegrated into society, whilst others firmly maintained that this was out of the question because of the innate, inferior characteristics of asocials. The concept of a closed asocial colony in which asocial families could be socially engineered into valuable members of the national community through the imposition of strict control and surveillance was seen as a possible solution, hence the setting up of Hasshüte. Advocates of the asocial colony, such as Otto Wetzel, the mayor of Heidelberg, clearly believed that it could be a useful and effective method of dealing with the asocial problem, offering the possibility of maintaining family units, separating them from the rest of a city's inhabitants, guaranteeing clean, cheap, and durable housing, and exerting educational influences and constant surveillance over asocial families. The idea of an asocial colony also seemed favorable because, apart from hereditary factors, the milieu in which a child grew up was considered to have some bearing on its nature. Nazi criminal biological experts maintained that children who grew up in atrocious tenement housing or led a wandering lifestyle were reared as thieves, beggars, or vagabonds. Such children saw that work was of no value or importance to their parents. Their tendency towards asociality because of their biological makeup was exaggerated by an, quote, asocial environment, unquote. By the way, this is obviously in the viewpoint of the Third Reich. Continuing. Educational influence, quote, unquote, entailed compulsory work and surveillance for the men. And again, I think some similarities between some of the workfare proposals and some aspects of security procedures being implemented in inner city areas in which virtual entire neighborhoods are turned into sort of low-level minimum security prisons is worth taking note of here. Beginning again with this sentence, educational influence entailed compulsory work and surveillance for the men, observation, leadership, and control of the work of the women, the control of the household in which the family lived, and training and supervision of the children. Note also Newt Gingrich's Boys Town proposals for dealing with the children of so-called welfare mothers. Again, I think there's an important and valid analogy, by no means a precise one. Continuing. In addition, from a purely financial point of view, there was a rational motive for the asocial colony to reduce public expenditure on asocials. Following an initial outlay, the Bremen authorities would be able to cut down their expenditure on those groups. For example, henceforth, they would not have to pay out welfare benefits, rent, and outstanding rent. Skipping down, Hasshüte termed a welfare housing institution, unquote, but in effect, a kind of prison, was set up by SS member Hans Haltermann, the senator for employment. By the way, that's Haltermann. Oh, excuse me. Hasshüte termed a welfare housing institution, but in effect a kind of prison, was set up by SS member Hans Haltermann, the senator for employment, technology, and welfare, and was the most significant experiment in the area of housing asocials. It was a unique institution, representing a halfway point between a municipal housing estate and a concentration camp along the lines of those set up elsewhere by the National Socialist regime. The separation of, quote, deviant, unquote, proletarian groups from the rest of society through internment per se was in no way the brainchild of the National Socialists. This idea had its precursors in the compulsory workhouses first set up in 16th century England and Holland, which were used to discipline similarly poorer sectors of the population. What was new, however, was the use of the asocial colony as a testing ground for the, quote, fitness, unquote, of asocials to see whether or not they could be engineered into valuable individuals. This meant, in the first place, discovering the extent of the, quote, waywardness, unquote, of the families interned, whether they could be deemed capable of, quote, improvement, unquote, or irredeemably diagnosed as dangerous to the community or nation. If they could demonstrate improvement, these families were released into normal society, but if they could not, they might well end their days in a concentration camp. Consequently, Hashuda was seen as a completely new kind of way to deal with the asocial problem, giving so-called asocial families a last chance based on, quote, education, unquote, and draconian compulsory measures to become integrated into the national community. Hashuda consisted of 84 family houses, an administration building, a bathing area, and a children's home, skipping down. Indeed, now the next segment covered here is a description of how frequently those who wound up in Hashuda were people who did not necessarily want to be there. And obviously, the law enforcement authorities were brought into play in order to see to it that they wound up there. Returning to this particular article, indeed, the involvement of the police was often required for those families that did not undertake to enter Hashuda voluntarily. The criteria for being admitted included unwillingness to work, refusal to work, lack of thrift, lack of restraint, drinking, peddling, begging, as well as disturbing community life and neglect of children. Halterman believed that the asocial colony was correct, according to National Socialism, and that through it there was the possibility of improving public life, raising the quality of population and decreasing crime. Halterman believed that the asocial colony was correct, according to National Socialism, and that through it there was the possibility of improving public life, raising the quality of the population, and decreasing crime. The legal basis upon which Hashuda's system of admission operated was essentially paragraph 1 of the Decree for the Protection of the State and Nation of February 28, 1933, under which asocials were described as representing a danger to the entire nation, unquote. This threat could be averted by placing such families compulsorily in a closed institution. Families were sent to Hashuda at the behest of the local welfare authority. For example, it was proposed that the widow S. and her four children, two of whom had already been sterilized and one of whom was born illegitimately, should be placed in the institution because of their asocial behavior, unquote. The family needed help to, quote, stop being a danger to society, unquote. Again, I have been reading from an article entitled Hashuda, an Experiment in Nazi Asocial Policy. This is from History Today magazine of July of 1995. It was authored by Lisa Pine, a lecturer at Luton University, L-U-T-O-N. And again, I think that many of the proposals that the Third Reich incorporated into Hashuda are all unnervingly similar to proposals that are either already on the books or being proposed for dealing with various aspects of America's social ills, in particular dealing with some of the more intractable social problems of the inner city areas. This is not, by the way, that my criticism of those programs and my drawing of what I think is a terrifying and valid analogy between those programs and Hashuda should in no way be misconstrued as representing an endorsement of the status quo for dealing with many of these problems. The status quo has not worked. However, I think there are a great many things, including a reprioritization of society and, to a certain extent, a redistribution of wealth that could work considerably better than what we have been seeing so far. I have made allusions to various archive shows, and by the way, some of the archive shows dealing or directly relevant to some of the things we've been talking about, I would recommend, first of all, Radio Free America number 32, also the miscellaneous archive show dealing with the King Alfred Plan. I would also recommend the Pink Triangle dealing with the Third Reich's policy towards gays, also comparing the policies of the American contemporary right vis-a-vis gays to those of Nazi Germany. Also, the program called Euthanasia in Nazi Germany and Contemporary America, the broadcasts, the pro-series, I should say, entitled The Seeds of Nuremberg, also the broadcast done in November of 1994 entitled Family Values. I would also recommend to people a very, very fine book called The Nazi Connection, authored by Stefan Kuhl, K-U-Umlaut-H-L, published in hardcover by the Oxford University Press and copyrighted 1994. This deals with the profound influence of American eugenics thinking and legislation upon eugenics legislation and social policy in the Third Reich. I think many listeners will find that an extremely important broadcast to check out. All of these archive shows are on permanent file with a tape duplication service. More information about that right now.
Tape cassettes of Dave Emery's archive documentaries and weekly One Step Beyond programs are available from a tape duplication service. The service is Archives on Audio, and you can contact them at Post Office Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. Once again, that's P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number and area code are 415-346-1840. A 12-page catalog listing and describing each archive show is available.
That's now, by the way, a 19-page catalog, and I strongly recommend that for people who are interested in pursuing some of these subjects further, and I strongly recommend that people do that. By the way, the home base station on which I record these programs, KFJC-FM out of Los Altos Hills, has its own webpage, and on that webpage, the descriptions of all of the various archive shows are available. There's also a recommended reading list, and also a list of other information sources that are strongly recommended by yours truly. In order to get to the website, the address for the KFJC website, which again contains all of the descriptions for all of the archive shows, well, the information about how to get there is as follows.
KFJC is available on the World Wide Web. Simply point your web browser at http://www.cygnus.com/misc/KFJC. Spelling that out for you using all lowercase letters, http://www.cygnus.com/misc/KFJC. We remain your source for sound information.
And again, the archive shows are all listed. There are descriptions of each of the archive shows, and the programs are cross-referenced with other broadcasts containing similar or related material. And neither KFJC nor yours truly gets money out of that arrangement. That is set up FYI. That concludes this particular segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.